Welcome to Literary Quest, a podcast hosted by us, Vicky and Marissa, where we discuss our favorite in fantasy fiction and hopefully can direct you in your quest to find your next great read.
Welcome to Literary Quest. We are going to be discussing Chasm by Stacey McEwen. This is the sequel to Ledge, which we covered back in 2022. So if you need a refresher, you can go back and listen to that episode. I'll be covering the characters and Marissa will be picking up with our plot. So just a refresher. In this world, there are people who live on the ledge of a chasm. Every once in a while, Glacians, which are evil flying immortals, steal a few humans. Those humans then have their souls taken, which are used to keep Glacians immortal. So we have Dawson. She is our main female character. She's lived most of her life on the ledge. In the previous book, she escaped, found out that the Glacians stole people's souls, and that she is royalty. She's badass with an axe and has a strong sense of loyalty to the people on the ledge who she wants to save. Then we have Ryan, the main male character and romantic interest. At the end of the last book, he betrayed Dawson and then supposedly died. He's half Glacian and half human, so he has wings like a Glacian but has human skin. In the last book, with the help of Dawson, he and some other hybrids, including Adric, a trusted friend, did a coup and took over Glacia. He is very strong as well as smart. He cares deeply for Dawson and also has a strong sense of loyalty to his people. We have two evil queens in this story, Queen Elvira and Queen Cressida. They are threatened by Dawson's existence as she is the rightful heir. While initially they were loved, they have become more and more corrupt as the years have gone on. They are now power hungry and care mainly for themselves rather than their citizens. There are also several important side characters. We have Baltice, who is an old and powerful mage who helps Dawson a lot throughout the book. There's also Ezra and Salem. They are longtime friends with Ryan and Baltice. They provide a lot of comic relief with their banter. There's also Hector, Dawson's friend from the ledge. We have Ruby, who's the captain of the guard. In terms of location, this takes place mainly in Tersaw with some visits to the ledge as well as Glacia. Marissa, would you like to pick up with the plot?
Chasm picks up where Ledge left off, with Dawson imprisoned by the Queens of Tersaw, covered in Ryan's blood, mourning his death while also feeling furious with him for lying to her. Queen Elvira comes periodically to convince Dawson to lean into the life that she and Queen Cressida have scripted for her, to abandon the people of the ledge and become a beacon for the people of Tersaw, but Dawson refuses. She would rather die than abandon her people, much to the frustration of the captain of the guard, Ruby, who has been sneaking Dawson extra meals and pushing her to live. As Dawson will not concede, the queens decide to have her publicly hanged for treason. But things go awry at her hanging, and Dawson is rescued by Ryan's mage friend, Baltice, and Salem, the inn owner, who is also Ryan's friend. Baltice takes Dawson to her cabin in the woods, where Dawson begins to create a plan to save the ledge people while also trying and failing to use the Iskra, the magic that she obtained from the pool in Glacia in the last book. Meanwhile, Ryan is not dead, though he is being held imprisoned by the queens and not totally alive either, thanks to the wound that he sustained in the last book. A mage comes to heal him, and the queens attempt to leverage his loyalty to Dawson, but he will not be swayed against her. He also escapes the queens and uses a spelled charm to take him to Dawson, who he finds seeking shelter on the side of a frozen mountain, where she and Baltice had just folded, which is like apparating. Their reunion is rough. Dawson is shocked to see Ryan alive, and is also struggling with wanting to kill him. But their feelings must wait as the guards who are pursuing Ryan and his escape arrive on the mountain too. Ruby, the captain of the guard, is part of this contingent of guards, and she convinces the guards to leave with their lives, encouraging them to tell the queens that she was taken captive. Things are tense, but Dawson lets Ruby live and they find shelter. Eventually, they make their way to Glacia, where Dawson hopes the Council of Mixed Glacians, like Ryan, will be convinced to liberate the Ledge people from the Ledge. But Adric, a former mentor of Ryan's, has set himself up as the new king of Glacia. The council meets, and the majority of the new governance of Glacia opposes rescuing the Ledge folk. Baltis is able to read into Adric's mind and discovers that Adric has been drinking from the Pool of Iskra, and like the overthrown King Vastil, he plans to harvest the remaining Ledge people's souls. Dawson is furious. Realizing that they will receive no help from the Glacians, they make a quick plan to abandon the kingdom, taking two of Ryan's closest friends with them. Ryan agrees to return Dawson to the Ledge to try to convince the people to leave, but it's a disaster. They regroup in Baltis's forest to form a different plan to save the people of the Ledge. Will they succeed? Spoilers abound.
So I really liked this book. I ended up reading it really quickly. I read most of it in a day. I meant to take my time with it, but I got really wrapped up and it was just over with. So
yeah, I felt like it was a pretty quick read.
Yeah, and it was like 500 some odd pages,
I think. Yeah, there's a lot of action, and I felt like in this story that moved it along pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was grateful for that because it started off fast.
It did. Well, and it picked up right where the last book left off, which was great. There weren't any time jumps. I felt like for the second book in the series, this was actually a really good book. You know, a lot of times we run into stories where the second book is not the best in the series. And I didn't feel like that with this one. Court of Mist and Fury is the same way for me in the Aegitar series. It's actually my favorite book in the series, probably. So I think we overcame the second book curse with this one.
Yeah, it is like almost canon, sort of, that the second book is always going to be middle ground. You know, like it's going to be not as good as the first or next one.
Yeah.
But yeah, this one was not like that. It was great. And yeah, we managed to get more world building on top of all of the action too. So
yes,
yeah,
I really appreciated that as an aspect of this story as well, because in the first book, there were a lot of historical questions that were left open, mm-hmm. and mythological stuff that we didn't get answers for, and I felt like Stacy really filled in a lot of the questions about the history of these people that we didn't get answered in the first book, mm-hmm. which I really appreciated.
And I loved the mythology that she came up with too. Mm-hmm. Like the explanation, I guess, for the tides was that one god or monster, I don't remember. I think his name started with
Gorgum.
Yeah, it started with a G.
Yeah.
Like he's trying to get out of the ocean, so he like claws up, and I think that's supposed to be their explanation for the tide, is that it's him trying to claw his way out of the ocean.
Yeah, there was also a story about where all of the snow came from on the mountain, right? So there's I forget, it had a name too. The snow had like a monster name as well, but it was something that slowly encroached, and by the time the creature that guarded the mountain noticed it was too late. And then the Glacians also have a mythology story about what's on the other side of the mountain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I appreciated that in this book. Dawson is still a great character.
Yeah, I really like her. She gives me kind of Aelin vibes with the whole being a badass thing, but she's just not quite as clever, I feel like, which is fine because she doesn't have that experience that Aelin had, you know?
Right.
So she had all that like sass and badassery and stuff. Like her main weapon is an axe. Like that's awesome.
I love that. I just adore that her weapon of choice is an axe.
Mm.
Yeah. I think it's so great. And she's so brutal with it.
Mm-hmm.
I just love that. I like her as a character. She's great, but she's so stubborn. Sometimes I get frustrated with her because she's just being very obstinate. Like, I love a confident female main character who knows their business and isn't going to let other people push them around, but there's a lot of stuff that she doesn't know. So I love it when we have a female main character that's confident and knows herself and her business and can handle herself. But there was a lot of stuff that she didn't know that she learned about herself this book, like that she has the Iskra magic, but also that she is a mage and has mage blood in her family. And she needed Baltisa's help in learning how to use that stuff and learning how to manage her magic. And she would just refuse to do things that were asked of her, like to close her eyes. Baltisa would try to teach her how to use her magic, but she would ask her to do something, and Dawson would be like immediately no, which is frustrating. Do you want help or not?
Yeah, I was frustrated with that too, especially because that was in the wood forest, right? They had a lot of time. I feel like there was a lot of time for them to like maybe play around and train and stuff like that and try to learn more about her. But they did not take advantage of that time
There
because.
was a point where I felt like their antagonism was not productive. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No problem. I was just saying that, yeah, I feel as well. I have a note in it being like, she really needs to get this shit under control because she just basically kind of exploded and killed people. So.
She gets mad, her magic starts to work, and then the other part of her magic attacks it, and then she's in pain for like a day. She's out of the game. I just don't think that her stubbornness always served her super well in the story. I get that that's her personality, but could we just get on with it? If you need help, let her help you. You're gonna have to cope with some of this distrust at some point. Dawson's reluctant heroism is something that I appreciate because I don't feel like if I were a main character in a story, I would be the type of person who leapt into danger to help people. I would be nobody else is going to do this, so I guess I'm going to do it type of hero. Or I'm going to do this, but I'm going to be really irritable about it. I like you're gonna suffer if I have to do this, but I'll do it. And I appreciate that about her because her attitude is like, I don't really want to do this, but no one else is gonna do this. And I'm not gonna abandon these hateful people who probably won't even appreciate my efforts because it's the right thing to do to help them. And so we've read books before where the main character didn't want to be a main character and it got really annoying. Like, I will forever be scarred by Alina from Shadow and Bone. And so I think that Dawson is a great representation of this character trope, and I don't find her reluctance annoying at all. I find it really relatable. Whereas with Alina, it was like, it reminded me actually of Clara, the companion from Doctor Who for Matt Smith's last season and Peter Capaldi. Like, she got to go to space and do all this cool stuff, and she was really whiny.
I agree. I think if I was the main character in a book, I don't think I'd be a main character in the book because I would not leap into danger and I would not probably even reluctantly help people. I might. They tried to kill her. I feel like I would not try to save people who tried to kill me. I don't think I have that in me as a person. You try to kill me, I'm not helping you.
Fine. Go
Clearly,
ahead and die.
right? Fall off the edge, okay?
You get what you get. I did my part.
Right? I tried.
I also think that Dawson is peak eldest female sibling energy, and maybe that's why I find her relatable in some ways. She's like managing everybody's feelings, picking up stuff that is not her responsibility to pick up, trying to save everyone, feeling a lot of guilt for things that she should not feel guilt for. Like, She needs the membership card for the obstinate, headstrong female club.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, she definitely, yeah. I felt bad for her at times for it, you know. She put all of this stuff on herself. Mm-hmm. And she didn't need to, but she's not good at delegating.
No.
So this book, like, started off in action, right? Like, she's locked up, she's almost executed, but they manage to, like, somebody starts a riot or revolt, sort of. Salem does, right? I think it was. She runs away. So it just starts like right off the bat, just fast paced, which I appreciated. And especially because the author managed to do this, make it really fast paced, but also remind you of what happened in the last book at the same time without it being like a big chunk, you know? So we were able to have all this action without all of this, like a ton of reflection, I guess, on the last book to catch the reader up.
Yeah.
And I think that was really smart the way she did that, because, you know, it triggered my memory and everything without feeling like spark notes, sort of, you know?
Right. Yeah. I appreciated that too, because it has been over a year since we read the last book and I had forgotten a lot of things. And I do think that there was a good recap without it feeling like a recap. I agree. I also really loved like the execution scene. I felt like that was written so great. I just really adore public revolts.
Oh yeah.
And I felt like Salem's role in instigating it was so good. It really highlights how delicate like the situation in Tarasaw is right now as well, because everyone turned up to see Dawson. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of unrest already. People are calling for her calling to see her. She can hear them calling for her in the streets from her prison cell. And it takes a single sentence from Salem in this moment to set off a really terrific chain of events with people rallying to support Dawson. And then it's on from there.
And then they go and try to burn Ezra and Salem.
And Salem, yeah. Yeah, that was terrible.
Yeah.
Yep. Brian's alive.
Yay.
Goodness.
So
you can't kill off the main love interest.
No, you can't. I'm surprised. Like, whenever like a book ends on a cliffhanger where it's like, oh no, is like the main character dead? I'm not super worried about the next book.
Right. Like that. They wouldn't have one. There wouldn't be another story.
Yeah. You wouldn't have a story. Like, I mean, maybe they could kill the love interest and introduce a new one, but still.
Yeah, that's a real hard take in the first book if you want your readers to come back in the second or third books. I think you got to save that stuff for the end. If you're going to kill off main characters, do it in the last book.
Yeah. Yep. You don't want to lose the reader.
Yeah. Yeah. So Ryan's not dead. And Baltese, I guess, is the one that heals him in his cell, but he busts out of their prison cells as well. And he uses his magic charm to track Dawson, and they have this really dramatic reunion on the side of the mountain. She sees him, and it sounds like immediately throws a knife at him. So,
yeah.
What a reunion.
I know. Well, she struggled so much with feelings for him, right? Because she finds out at the end of the last book that he betrayed her, kind of changed his mind at the very last moment, right? Mm-hmm. And then died. So she said he's dead, but she's mad about what he did. So she's got all these conflicting emotions, and it's not great. You feel bad about being mad at a dead person, right? Because you're not really I feel like you're not really supposed to be, right? It's always been like, oh, you don't speak ill of the dead, right?
Yeah.
So, which I think is a little outdated, because, you know,
You can totally speak ill of the dead.
Yeah. But I feel her struggle with, like, well, I'm mad at him. I didn't get closure about being mad at him.
Yeah.
He's dead and I still like him. So
yeah.
Yeah, I felt her.
Yeah. Grief is pretty strange. I mean, that is a really hard situation to be in. She just found this person that she might kind of love, but at the same time, every person she's loved up until this point has died, which kind of cements her decision to stay aloof and unattached.
Mm-hmm.
Also, he betrayed her and she almost died because of him. So there's anger about that. Yeah. Grief is hard and weird and sad. And
it wasn't addressed in this book. I think it may have been addressed in the last book, where he made the deal with the queens even after he slept with her and started developing feelings. And I really feel like that should have been explored more.
Yeah, I feel like the circumstances surrounding the deal that he made with the queens should have been explored more, period. Just
Yeah.
the whole thing. One, partially because I forgot that. but two, I don't think that they really delved into the circumstances or his rationale behind making that deal before she ultimately decided to forgive him and move on. And
See,
I think that's a conversation that needed to be had.
Yeah, I kept waiting for that conversation to happen throughout the book. You know, they had their little moments and stuff, but the conversation never happened. And even the chapters that are, you know, sort of from Ryan's point of view, it's third person and everything, you know, we don't get much insight into that either. So
yeah, he had a lot of remorse and he apologized, but I think it would have been nice to have some exploration into the entire situation.
At one point, right, Baltice tells her, oh, you know, you're alive because of him, and Dawson gets really mad and she says something along the lines of, I will not let any, like, people need to stop discrediting me in favor of a man or something like that. And I loved that for her.
I did too.
But I also have mixed feelings about Baltice, right? Because she's super powerful, which is awesome. She knows a lot. She's kind of funny, I guess. But she also isn't forthcoming and can be pretty difficult at times, you know. I guess she kind of has a temper as well. She makes people, like, you know, hurts them on purpose when they irritate her. So,
yeah, I felt the same way. I highlighted that sentence that you described about Dawson not being discredited and in favor of a man, and I think she makes a really good point later on that Dawson wouldn't have been in the situation with the queens in the first place if Ryan hadn't taken her there.
Right.
So he would not be, because they still think he's dead, he wouldn't be dead at this point if he hadn't done that in the first place. So there is that. But also I felt the same mixed feelings about Baltice, because she is a difficult, she's pretty prickly. She's a difficult character to like a lot of times. And I think some of that is rooted in shame. She, I think, has a lot of guilt for the things that she's done over her centuries of her life, especially because we find out later in the book that Baltice was partially responsible for the creation of the Pool of Iskra and the creation of the Glacians. So then that means all of the people that have died because of this are kind of hanging out on her conscience. And so I can see why she didn't want to delve into that, and how the shame and guilt that she would have because of that would keep her distant from other people, because there's probably some self-loathing that goes in with that too. And I also think that part of her distance that she creates with people and her prickliness comes from just being centuries old and not sharing a lot of things out of self-preservation. from being the most powerful being around. And that makes her kind of unhelpful sometimes because, and I think this makes sense, if I was a centuries old being and super strong and capable of really tremendous things, I probably wouldn't feel like I had to be accountable to or answer to people who are children.
Yeah.
In perspective, you know,
yeah.
If I'm 900 years old, am I likely to give a shit about what a 25-year-old is going to say to me?
Probably not. We get that a lot with like old and powerful characters, you know.
Yeah.
It is. They tend to be rather jaded, I suppose.
Yes. Yeah. And I think it makes sense. But also, when you've lived that long and seen as much as they have seen in their lifetime, your perspective on things that are happening right in that moment is probably different, right? It'll pass for them because they're going to live, most likely. They're very long lived. So I agree. I found her really frustrating sometimes, and I disliked her sometimes. And I think that her reasons for being the way that she are makes sense. But I mean, I probably wouldn't want to hang out with her on a Friday night.
No.
This isn't the person that I would go bar hopping with.
She's pretty pushy with Dawson, I feel like, especially about Ryan.
Yeah.
You know? And Dawson doesn't want to talk about it, but she pushes, and then she mentions a tether, right? Saying that Dawson and Ryan have a tether holding them together. And Dawson just hates that.
Right.
Absolutely, which I don't blame her at all. But I'm assuming this is a fated mates sort of trope happening here.
Yeah, it kind of seems like it.
Yeah. But yeah, she hates the idea of a tether, which I could totally understand, because then that feels like your choice is being taken away.
Right.
No.
Dawson really struggles to lean into her relationship with Ryan, too. And we saw, I mean, that was present in the last book as well. Her struggle to trust him, which makes sense. And that just continues in the story with even greater difficulty trusting him. Part of that, I think, also stems from just a fear of being vulnerable. Ryan, in the story, after he's reunited with Dawson, realizes that part of her problem with him and their relationship isn't really a problem with him, but a problem that she has with herself.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't feel worthy of love because of the things that she did to survive on the ledge. And she talks about that when they rescue Hector from the ledge. She and Hector have a conversation where she says, what could he possibly want to do with me? I'm mean and I kill people and I'm really harsh and brutal. And he's like, yeah, but you're also like creative and very loyal and you care a lot about people, even when they try to kill you.
Mm-hmm.
So she struggles with her own self, and that manifests in the relationship and her ability to have a relationship with Ryan too.
Yeah.
She doesn't feel like she brings anything to their relationship. And I think she also probably struggles with loving Ryan because she's afraid of being hurt again, because everyone that she's loved up until now has died. And loving another person requires a lot of vulnerability. And so she has to risk being hurt again, and the idea of losing another person is repellent to her, so much so that it's actually the thing that provokes her magic to start working together instead of trying to kill her. So
yeah, and I think that conversation with Hector that you referenced was really beneficial for her,
mm-hmm.
because he's known her for so long, you know.
Yeah.
They kind of grew up together and everything. So I think that conversation was beneficial towards her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think he lends a good, like, the lens through which he sees the world is going to be different from everybody else, except in part Dawson, because he had to live the same difficult life that she did.
Mm-hmm.
The ruthlessness that when they rescue him, he's in a fight with somebody. So he understands the trauma and the way that you have to become to live on the ledge. And that's that's how she's existed for so long. And so I think having him present to, one, point out that she's not just a ruthless, hateful murderer, but also that he relates to the experiences that she had because he experienced them too, and is still able to see the good in her, is important.
Yeah. She really struggles with who she is, like, especially now that she's off the ledge, right? She says at one point she has a desire to flee the parts of her she does not recognize, but it is no use. She walks and walks, but everywhere she goes, there she is. So she'd already been, like, the ledge was all survival, right? Everything about that was survival. There wasn't really room for relationships too much. It was all focused on survival, and now she's in a new area, a new territory, and just where there are choices that she can make, choices whether or not to kill people or not kill them. You know, right. It's not just survival now it's strategy too. And she struggles with that in this book.
Yeah.
Needing to go from just survival mode to living at the same time. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, and I think Hector in their conversation points some of that out to her as well. He says, he points out that she's scared of herself, basically, because she feels fearful, I think, of what her relationship with Ryan could do to her if she experiences loss again. Loss is hard. But I think it's also hard, and she runs into this some too, because they spend so much time in the forest. So there's a lot of time for self-reflection in this book. And it's hard to make peace with the person that you become to survive trauma and the person that you can evolve into once you've escaped trauma. I mean, that's difficult. And so she's running into figuring out who she can become now that she doesn't have to fight her environment all the time, as well as the people around her. It would be hard to be soft after being hard most of your life. A lot of aspects of Dawson's story reminded me of the things that I've just experienced in processing grief and trauma with my therapist. It's really interesting to see parallels with the character and some of the work I've done on myself. So
when I was reading this, I wasn't super focused on Ryan and Dawson's like relationship. I felt that the plot, I was fine with it being really plot heavy, which is what I felt this book was. I think it was very plot heavy, which is totally fine. I was super into the plot. It took him a while to show back up, and then there was, you know, they still had their chemistry and he felt bad and there was good angst and everything. But it was almost towards the end of the book where they finally reconciled, and it did not bother me. Sometimes that bothers me, you know, if they have a lot of back and forth and it's a slow burn and then you just want to be like, just kiss already. But it didn't bother me because there was so much other stuff going on.
Yeah. I felt the same, but I was unbothered because I felt like Ryan needed to suffer.
He did. I have a note in there being like, I hope he suffers or something.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, grovels. Yeah. That's what I put. I hope he grovels.
Yeah. I don't think it would have been true to the character, to Dawson, if they had reunited very shortly after he had been freed from prison. I would not have believed it. And I felt like he needed to suffer for a while for betraying her trust. And I think Dawson needed to be mad at him.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of his friends are like pushing her to be forgiving even when they still think he's dead. They're pushing her to be forgiving or be less harsh about him. And I think she's valid in feeling the way that she feels, and she's allowed to be angry and upset with him because he betrayed her trust, and it didn't matter if he didn't intend to act on it there at the end. The road to hell is paved with good intentions. They still ended up in a really terrible situation because he was dishonest with her.
Yep. Yeah, she says, shoot, I highlighted it, but I don't remember off the top of my head. Something that I didn't fall for him because of his honor or something. I fell for him because of his honesty. And now that was a lie or something like that. That
Yeah.
He's not honest. Which yeah. I thought was an interesting point.
Yeah. I was totally fine with the romance part being secondary in this story. I didn't feel like it needed to be a priority. There was too much else going on.
Yeah.
The plot in this book didn't go where I thought it would go, which I appreciated because it seems like I don't often feel surprised by stories these days. I don't know. And so I expected there to be some kind of rebellion against the Queens or the Glacians to liberate the Ledge people, neither of which happened. They spent a long time in Baltese's forest, and I felt like their time could have been used better, like doing spy stuff or with Ryan and the other Glacians that were part of the Izgoi, their rebel movement, regrouping. Because we find out late in the book that Adric has been creating peace treaties with the Queens, which is really pretty problematic to their cause.
Yeah, I was really surprised. Baltese leaves for like 4 or 5 days and they're just hanging around, not doing anything.
Yeah.
Really. What?
Yeah.
I expected more to happen there, more planning or something, but
literally anything. Yeah, they get drunk in the woods one day, which, you know, sometimes you need to alleviate the stress. Okay. Well, I feel like our time could have been used a little bit better. Also, Baltese could have told them where they were going, where she was going. She didn't. Chaos ensues. She fetches Yennis, who is one of the people from the Ledge many years ago who survived the chasm, but we don't find that out until Garrett's died and Ruby's been taken, and there's a lot of terrible things that happened in the 4 days when she was gone. So, also, I don't remember if we speculated on this last time, but if not, I'm speculating on it now. The Queens are so fearful of losing their power, and it's mentioned several times how aged they've become. I would think that some part of this deal with Adric involves them drinking Iskra so they'll stop aging and can remain in power. Right?
I would not be surprised. That definitely seems on brand for them.
Especially given what we know about the history of how the pool became. So we find out that Baltese and some of her very strong mage friends created it for King Vastil, who was a human. Who got very power hungry and asked them to give him mortality. So they created this pool. I feel like this is a history repeating itself type of situation.
Yeah.
These queens want to remain in power. Cressida even makes a comment to Ruby at the end about how she wasn't trying to get power, but once you have it, not having it is a big problem. So yeah, I think that there's got to be something like that ongoing.
Yeah.
If I were a power-hungry queen, that would be what I'm trying to do. So
it is the logical next step. They have to keep drinking the Iskra, right? It's not just one and done.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, and that's what transforms them ultimately. We didn't know that, but that's how Bastille became a Glacian. And then so he turned white and developed wings, which is a really bizarre evolution story, I think. It also made me start to wonder how breeding works with these people, because if you have to drink it to become a then are people born as glacial? Like, how does the mixed breed thing work then? And then, I don't know.
I was thinking that too. I was, yep, that threw me for a loop too. I was like, how do they breed?
What is the reproduction cycle like here?
Exactly.
I just don't, if
they
you
have
drink
to...
it, then does it pass on to the fetus? Is that how that works?
Right, or does the fetus have to Well, then would it stay? See?
Yeah, I just have some
But
questions about.
they age, but they don't age because they're immortal. So you'd have to wait to give a baby Glacian Iskra. I don't know.
I don't know how it works. I got confused.
Me too.
Also, I had zero problem imagining like Mitch McConnell and Donald Trump and Joe Biden and every other garbage politician that we have in the United States making the same deal.
Yeah.
Remain in power despite being 100 years old and being part of our governing body. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm
They
very
are the
confident
queen.
that Mitch McConnell is kept alive just by hate. That is what sustains him.
Yeah.
But it's so true. Look at Dianne Feinstein. She was basically, she had multiple strokes. Her daughter had to vote for her or whatever, like cast it for her.
Yeah.
It's like she was practically dead and still in the government. Like, come on.
Come on.
At some point, just stop.
Ruby was a relatively new character to the story, and I really liked her introduction. I felt like her character development was interesting. I enjoy seeing a person's beliefs unravel in real time, and we get to see that with her. She goes from being the dedicated servant of the Queen's to the questioning servant, and then the rebel, and then the one that's determined to bring them down. To me, it's like when you grow up in a small town with small beliefs and you don't know any different, and then you leave the town and you realize that you've been sold a really limited version of reality, which is why you should leave your small towns for even a small amount of time. Meet different people.
All types of people out there.
All of them. All different versions of reality out there. Also, Ruby's story was unfinished by the end of the book, and I don't know where this was going. Are they leading her to the gallows in her last chapter? Is she coming back?
Yeah, I wasn't sure. At some point, I kind of lost interest in her character. I really liked her at the beginning when she was introduced. And I
Yeah.
guess probably for the same reasons that you were talking about, we see her like unravel a little bit, her
Yeah.
belief. But after that, I she was just kind of there. And then when she was taken, I know they thought she left, but Dawson seemed pretty convinced of her innocence. She was like, she wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
Then nothing happened. They just stopped talking about her.
Yeah.
What happened?
Yeah. Yeah. And nobody decided to try to go save her or figure out where she went.
No,
So,
not at all.
not on her own. I kind of hope that she, I don't know, doesn't die and maybe ends up taking on the role of the queens, because they're going to have to, something's going to have to happen with them. And the Sabars weren't always the leaders of Tarsaw. It was Vastil before, and he was overthrown. So maybe Ruby will take up the mantle on leadership. Or maybe she'll die. Who knows?
Yeah, I do want to see where she ends up, but she wasn't the most interesting character to me.
Yeah.
Oh gosh, so they really did drop the ball with Adric. Adric, what is
Adric.
Adric? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like he's out there playing chess and they're playing Candyland, just hanging in the forest. Like,
Yeah. They definitely underestimated him.
I feel like
Carelessly.
Ryan should have at least had some sort of, like, I mean, because he was close, they were close,
Yeah.
and I don't. I definitely felt like there was a little bit of that
Yeah,
was a
well,
big
even
mistake on
I
them.
think his name is Phineas. Was it Phineas that was like one of the pure-blooded people that, what does pure-blooded even mean anymore? Because apparently if you just keep drinking the Iskra, you turn white and get wings. Like, I don't, what does this even mean anymore? I don't know. Yeah, I think his name was Phineas, though, that helped with the raising of Ryan as a child too, until Ryan goes to visit him in the prison, and Phineas, I think that's his name, I could be wrong, says something like, if you don't have Adric on your radar, then you are making a mistake. I tried to keep you away from him for a reason when you were a kid. He's bad news bears. Yeah. You should always question a charismatic leader. The fact that there weren't a billion red flags when they walked into the castle and saw him sitting in Vastille's throne with his group of cronies and misogynists.
I know. It's have you seen that TikTok guy who just runs around with a big red flag and goes, ma'am,
Yeah.
ma'am?
Yeah.
That's what it felt like. That's what that scene was. Somebody's
Yeah.
running around with a giant, giant red flag trying to get their attention, but
Yeah.
they don't see it.
I did like the small sections in the book that look back into Dawson's previous interactions with her grandmother and then Ryan's previous interactions with Adric. It might be Adric, whatever his name is. They gave us a look into how Adric was kind of grooming Ryan into becoming like him as an adult, and how Ryan's interactions with, I think his name is Phineas, prevented his ability to influence Ryan. We have like really complex characters here, which I like. We see that light dark thing pop up when talking about when talking about Dawson's magic, but also we see how maybe the purebloods aren't all just like pure bad folks, right? We see people who are pure-blooded and trying to help Ryan.
Yeah.
So that's representative of people. Most of the time, we're not, unless you're Lord Voldemort, all bad or all good. We're shades of those things.
I feel like a lot of this book was kind of coming to terms with that for the characters. So we learned Dawson is a mage. That's pretty cool. But now she's dying.
Yeah.
So
there's always something with her.
Gosh, she's so dramatic.
Yeah.
So now she has the two types of magic inside her, right? So she's got her mage magic, which was passed down from her grandmother or great-grandmother.
Yeah, her great-grandma.
Yeah, her great-grandmother. And then she has the Iskra in her, which is fighting the mage magic.
Yeah.
And will eventually, I guess, tear her apart and kill her.
Yeah, she doesn't learn to manage it.
Yeah. They try to teach her how to use them together, right? That's what ends up being ultimately the way that they're going to find their way around it, is that getting the magics to combine for a common goal. Right?
Yeah.
To work together. Which is smart.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Her love for Ryan and her fear of him being killed is the thing that gets her magic to work together, which is on par, I think. It wouldn't be her own sense of self-preservation. It would be the fear of someone else dying.
We do see a theme that pops up several times, though. The all things find a way back home. So I'm not big on sentiment like this, right? So the everything will work out in the end, or good always triumphs over evil, because it's just not true. So when I read those, I just, it's just not my favorite thing to read, right? Like, we have people who freeze to death on the streets. People don't, not everyone has their happy ending, right? And I feel like those are just kind of empty platitudes, ultimately.
Yeah.
And that's just fake, I guess. I don't know. So my view of it, right, is because although I have been very lucky, I have a great support system and everything, not everyone is that lucky, right? So you have people who end up homeless due to mental health issues. Their family can't take care of them. You have, our country, right, purposely puts up spikes so that homeless people don't have a place to sleep, right? And so I realized while I'm thinking about this that I'm looking at this from a very US-centric point of view, right? because that's what I think.
That's our reality.
Yeah, right. But the author is from Australia, so maybe that changes it a little bit. Like, I think I looked at it. I think Australia has better programs for addicts, right? Versus we condemn and put people in jail for, you know, for that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And then the good versus evil thing is just one reason I like books is because good does triumph over evil, and we're not seeing that reflected in real world at all.
Right. We get another new character. Her name is Yenis.
Yes.
She survived being deposited in the chasm 50 years ago.
Yep.
And has been living on the other side of it. So she walked to the end of the chasm.
Mm-hmm.
And has survived. Yep. I think it's really interesting, her story, but I got really frustrated because she talks about how there's like terrible things that live in the chasm, but she never reveals what actually lives in the chasm, and I want to know what is surviving at the bottom of a deep, dark hole.
I kept waiting for that too. I kept waiting for her to say something like a big rock man, or, you know, I don't know.
What could live down here? Goats?
Massive serpents somehow. Who knows?
Oh, yeah.
Something.
Big bugs, maybe? Like, what is down here? I want to know. I want to know so bad.
Yep.
Ah!
Well, they finally start coming up with a plan now.
Yeah.
It's a plan. Maybe not the best. I think it's the best that they could do.
Yeah.
I do think it's the best that they could have done with what they have.
Sure.
They basically just fly everyone from the ledge into the chasm, and then they're going to walk. Well, my view is that they're just going to walk and see what's on the other side. And I hope that there's something there.
Yeah, hope that there's not big chasm monsters, or that it doesn't end in like a big endless cave.
Yeah.
I guess. Or a volcano.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a chasm. But I don't know. Whatever. Mountain range, chasm, tectonic plates, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how can you not know what's on the other side of the mountain?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Like, how can you live? How can you be a being that lives in a kingdom where people have wings and you have wings and you can fly places and not have a single person who at some point decided to go and explore what was on the other side? But whatever. I agree. The plan was unexpected. I think it was probably the best that they can do, and I approve of it. There was like 100 pages left in the book. That's not enough time to plan a rebellion against two kingdoms and overthrow two governments. So they found a third way, and I think that's probably the best way.
Mm-hmm.
They go to the ledge. They finally get the people to agree to be rescued, and there's a battle. Of course there is. They get almost everybody deposited in the chasm, and then Adric and his cronies show up ready to eat, and they throw down. Dawson chops Adric's wing, which he did not have before and now has because he's been drinking the Iskra. And I just thought about how upsetting that must have been to him to finally have them and get them cut. What a nightmare. And then he pins her down and she sets him on fire, which I thought was hilarious.
Yes. Love it when they burn.
I was really hoping that that would be like enough to kill him, but I doubt it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how she's going to wrap this up. Because I don't think he's actually dead either.
Yeah, I don't think he's actually dead. He'll probably go home and drink whatever he can from the Iskra and heal himself. Yeah, I don't know. He, at one point during the battle, while he has Dawson pinned down, he makes a comment about draining her and then raping her soulless corpse. Or not, she'll still be alive, just soulless. And I just get so tired of rape being a threat, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I had a conversation recently with my beau about, he asked if I had considered having a penis before and what I would do with it, which is a resounding yes. Of course, I've thought about having a penis. Have you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, having a vagina is maybe one of the greatest inconveniences of my life. And the fear of being raped or something catastrophic happening with my reproductive organs or just being murdered because I have a vagina. Like, what would I do with a penis? Go for a walk.
Right? Not
without
being
pepper spray and not having to tell someone that I am going for a walk beforehand in the event that I disappear. Hike without fear.
Yep. Walk in a dark parking lot without having to use keys as like in between your knuckles, you know?
Yes. Go to the doctor without worrying about being gaslit for my pain.
Yep. I feel like the rape threat is very common in books.
Yeah.
And in movies and TVs too. I get TV
Yeah.
shows, right? Did you watch Game of Thrones?
No, I didn't want to feel that way about TV.
Yeah. So there was a big problem, like a big, I don't know, problem, but the people addressed the fact that they kept using rape as like a storyline and to progress women's characters. Like,
yeah.
And I hate that.
I do too. I feel like it gets brought up as a thing all the time, and I just get really tired of it because I think our society does a lot to make women fearful. And there's probably something in that related to keeping us policed and, I don't know, submissive. Maybe that's a function of misogyny and patriarchy as well. But it doesn't help that it shows up a lot as a trope in books and movies and other forms of media.
Yeah. Whenever a female character is like pinned under a male character, or wow, character, or captured by male characters, right? That's always my fear, is that I'm gonna have to read either a rape scene or read them constantly threatening to rape her and do terrible things to her.
But that doesn't happen. She sets Adric on fire. Ryan gets stabbed in the back. They leap into each other's arms and end up falling off of the side of the castle or the ledge. But Baltis folds them to the bottom and dies.
I saw that coming. I feel like Baltis's death. When she said, I mean, maybe it was hinted at earlier before this, but when she was said, oh, I know my limits, she's gonna die.
Yeah.
Yeah, when she said that, I was like, nope, she's dying.
Well, I figured something catastrophic was going to happen to someone because I read the author's note at the end, and Stacey makes a comment, like her last sentence, that ending, though. Sorry.
I know.
Well, okay, something terrible is going to happen.
It wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be, though.
No, I agree. I, again, didn't feel... feelings about Baltis were mixed most of the time. I do feel like this may have been a moment of absolution for her. This was a really noble thing that she did. And so, and she carried a lot of guilt about her contribution to the pool of Iskra and the impact that that has had. So this is maybe her moment to make peace with some of that and find some forgiveness for herself, maybe.
Yeah.
In her death. So,
yeah.
But yeah, everybody's at the bottom of the chasm now. And that's the end. Onward.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine a more miserable group to take a hike with?
Oh.
This is not going to be a fun trip.
Boy. I would definitely want to be either at like, I would want to be at the back of this hike. I don't want to be at the front with people or in the middle. I will slow myself down, stay in the back so I don't have to interact with them. And I wouldn't trust anybody with my back towards them either.
No.
Based on their history.
No. No. They are a pretty hardy group of people. So if they could survive on the ledge, I guess they could probably do okay with a hike through the bottom of a chasm. But I just don't think it would be a lot of fun.
No, it would not.
Is this book still supposed to be a trilogy? Was it originally supposed to be a trilogy? Am I right in thinking that? I can't remember.
Yeah, I think it was originally supposed to be a trilogy, but I can't imagine her wrapping this up. And
yeah, it's a lot of ground to cover in the next book, if that's the case.
Yeah, this seems to happen a decent amount where authors are like, oh, I'll write a trilogy, but now it's 4 books and 5 books. Like that happened with From Blood and Ash. And then the Fire and Flesh for her as well. Then Raven Kennedy did it. Her series ended up being like 5 books for
Guild.
Yeah. That's gonna ultimately be 5 books. It's supposed to be like a trilogy. So it seems to happen a decent amount. So I'm not surprised. And I'm fine with it. And I mean, I guess she could write one really long book.
Yeah, but with the type of like genre that this is, they typically limit the length of their books to a certain amount.
Yeah.
Like most YA books are not 900 pages long. So,
Yeah. So this will probably.
I really think 500 is on the longer end of that spectrum. That's what this book was, about 500 pages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot to wrap up or resolve, like with Adric and the Queens, and also getting the Ledge people through the chasm and settled on the other side of the world. Mm-hmm. The Queen's got to go. And like, I can't see Dawson wanting to be installed as a monarch, so I don't know where her story is going to lead. I honestly wouldn't be surprised at all if she and Ryan ended up dead at the end of this too, based on how the last two books have gone.
I was just gonna say that. I was gonna be like, they might die.
Yeah, I feel like this is, she's totally the author to write some unhappy endings, so
I wouldn't be mad. Like, those books really stick with you, though. Like, Dead Man's Rising? Oh my god.
Yeah.
Totally stuck with me.
Yeah.
Ugh. Feather? That's another one. Just.
So.
Yeah. I hope that doesn't happen, but I could see that really being the old, like, the best resolution for them, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of. Because I couldn't imagine them just going and living in peace.
Happily ever after.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll take positions of power, though. Like, they won't be, you know, monarchs or anything like that. They won't be royalty, but they might be advisors or something.
Yeah. You had a favorite quote?
Yes, I have. It's, goodness can hide amongst the bad, just as evil can wrap itself in righteousness. And I think this really highlights how gray the world is in this book, as well as just life in general. It's hard to tell. Like, we have religions that are very much, this is, you know, we love everyone, but then they restrict things, you know? Like, I think it's pretty common in life as well. And it's hard to see, especially, you know, we've got this, all this political stuff going on in like the Middle East, and Ukraine versus Russia, and all of this, and it's just very divisive, and people have different evil, different views on which one's good, which one's evil. Yeah. You know. And
well, that wraps up Chasm by Stacy McEwen. Join us next time. We'll be discussing Redwall by Brian Jock. This year, we're probably going to delve into a little bit more adolescent fantasy fiction. So if there's a fantasy book from your childhood or not childhood that you read as an adult that you really liked and you'd like for us to discuss, send us an email or contact us on Instagram. We'd love your recommendations. Several of the things that we have covered up until this point have been recommendations for us from our listeners. So you are always welcome to send them our way. This is also our first episode of 2024. So happy new year, folks. Thank you for listening. Thank you for listening to Literary Quest. We hope you enjoyed our episode. If you'd like to follow us on social media, we can be found at Literary Quest Podcast on Instagram or Facebook. You're also welcome to share your thoughts and ideas with us via email at literaryquestpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks again.